You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Top of the 8 o'clock hour, third and final hour of Miller and Moulton along the network. The Diamond District bonus hour is an hour away. Pat Kerwin joins us live from the NFL's owners' meetings in about 35 minutes' time. Thrilled to be joined once again by Josh Pastner, who's so good at doing the basketball and television thing that he was hired by ESPN, NBC, and CBS this year. That's after he led five teams in the NCAA tournament over 14 years and won four conference titles as a head coach. You can follow Josh on X at Coach the letter J Pastner, Coach the letter J Pastner, P-A-S-T-N-E-R. Josh, it's David and Mark. Thanks for your time. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it. Great time of the year. Great games, Thursday, really Tuesday through Sunday, if you include the first four. And then obviously some great matchups coming up this Thursday and Friday. So a lot to look forward to.
Well, you know, there's some people that are calling this the UConn Invitational. If you were playing UConn, how would you go about trying to slow down this team?
Well, UConn is really good. And I think in the last decade, they're the best team that has won a championship that has the best chance to repeat as national champions in the last decade. They've got the best opportunity to do so. There's not a lot you can do to slow them down. They are so efficient offensively. I love Tristan Newton. I love just the way they play and how they share the ball. Everything about them is just at a high, high level. And you look at a guy like Stephon Castle, who's projected to be, you know, a first-round pick, and you look at him, and I'm sorry, I got my son in the background making some noise back
there.
That's
okay. That's perfect.
Very noisy. That's him. But if you look at Stephon Castle, now that he's shooting the ball better from three-point range, what that's done is it's completely taking away where anybody could not or help off of anyone on UConn. And so that allows everyone to have to be guarded. And just one of those things where, and I want to just step out here so it'd be easier, but that's just one of those things where UConn becomes so dangerous to guard because of the fact that there's nobody you can help off of. And they are so good offensively. They defend. They take Coach Hurley's personality. And it's what makes them so good. And I just think they've got a great opportunity to repeat. Now, I've picked Houston to win it all. But UConn has the best chance in the last decade, as I mentioned earlier, to repeat as champions, which is rarefied air, obviously, to do that.
Josh, if somebody in the region that they're in before the Final Four is going to take them down, you've got two rock fight teams in Iowa State and San Diego State. You know, they'll keep the score down, very physical. And then you got Illinois. Okay, which style of play do you think has the best chance to match up with UConn? Okay, in the trenches, keep it low, or Illinois, who could put 80 or 90 on anybody?
Well, couple things. I love Iowa State. In fact, I've picked Iowa State to come out of that region. I think it's a Houston Cougar Iowa State final when it's all said and done. I think Iowa State's really good. I do think I've been the in the minority.
Do we lose them?
We kind of did.
Let me try calling them back real quick.
Okay. Josh Pastner, how about that? He's got Iowa State coming out of the East. Hope they play a little better than they did against Washington State, I'll tell you that. That was ugly.
Yeah, if he's going for that style, that's the coach right there. Like in that defense, the thing they can control the most. Play hard defense, play your tail off, and that's, not shocked to see coaches loving that style.
it'd be an all Big 12 final. Iowa State won the conference tournament.
CBS would love that final.
Not.
Got UConn, North Carolina, Purdue with the two-time player of the year. You got Duke still hanging around. Yeah, give me Iowa State and Houston.
Hello. Well, listen, about the only thing I picked Houston. That might be the only team I have left still in the tournament, Mark. That's how bad my bracket is. I do think this is the worst bracket I've ever filled out in 30 years of doing brackets. I'm pretty sure this is the worst bracket I've ever filled out. All right, Josh, let's move along because we only got a few minutes left.
I'm sorry about that. I got cut off, but I was just saying about the Iowa State-UConn. I think it's a I'm picking Iowa State in the Elite Eight. I don't think I love the Fighting the Illini and Brad Underwood's Illinois team. I don't know if you heard me say that, but they do have some holes defensively. They're extremely talented. But I think in the end, it's going to be an Iowa State-UConn. Wouldn't shock me to see UConn win, but I am picking Iowa State. I just think they're the closest team that resembles the University of Houston, who they are defensively.
Bama against North Carolina. Obviously, two teams love to go up and down the floor. I think both teams would be comfortable playing the game in the 90s. Can Bama defensively beat Carolina?
Yeah, you know, I said this before the tournament, I think Carolina and Arizona have the easiest path. When I say easy, I mean, look, you got to go win the games and everything to get to the Final Four. Now, only one of those two teams can get there, but I don't think either one's going to get stopped before they get to the Elite Eight, and I think it's a complete toss-up, Arizona versus North Carolina in the Elite Eight. I would probably side with Arizona only because of the home court in the West Coast. They travel so well. They're going to have the entire crowd there in Los Angeles, and it'll be a pro-Arizona crowd. But I just don't see Carolina and Arizona not advancing to the Elite Eight. I said when the brackets came out, I thought the West region was the easiest region for the 1 and 2 seeds to advance and meet, and that would still hold true. Nothing against Clemson and Brad Brunell, who's playing Arizona, who's outstanding. Same thing with Nate Oates in Alabama. But I just don't see those two teams being knocked off by either Clemson or Alabama. And Alabama can score. They've got Mark Sears, who's an outstanding scorer. The best in the SEC is in terms of points per game. You guys know Alabama plays as fast as anybody. They don't shoot any mid-range jump shots. Everything's a three-pointer or an attack at the rim. It's all about speed on how they play. But in the end, I just think when you got the ACC Player of the Year, you got with Baycott and Ingram, I do think Carolina has holes defensively now. There's things with them defensively that can cause that teams can beat them. Same thing with Arizona. I think both those teams are flawed. But I also think they both got the easiest region when you're looking at the overall deal.
Gonzaga and Purdue played already this year. It was a 10-point game. Both obviously have changed throughout the year. But the Zags have the bigs to maybe be able to try to slow down the player of the year. Do you think Gonzaga has enough to stop down Edie and Purdue?
No, I think Purdue's winning. I don't see how Purdue's not going to be in Detroit. I think with those two being obviously they won the first two games in Indianapolis. I think what they did to Utah State, which is a really good basketball team, should set a tone for everyone to fully understand. Doing a lot of work with the Big Ten this year, I know how good Purdue is. Zach Edey's amazing. The whole key down to Purdue is going to come down to Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer. I mean, it's just as much as they got with Lance Jones, the transfer from Southern Illinois has been a big addition for him in a lot of areas. It all comes down to Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer. If those two guys have a terrible night, yeah, I would say Purdue can lose, but it's those two guys. It's those two guys. And they can afford with one of the two not playing well and still win. Obviously, if both played bad, that's what happened last year in the first round of the tournament. Both were bad, and they lost. But I just think, you know, look, Braden Smith, they're a year older. He's one of the best point guards in the country. Fletcher Lawyer is playing at a high level. I just think those two guys are going to be play well enough for Purdue to advance and get to Glendale, Arizona.
Is Duke tough enough for Houston?
Well, I'll tell you what. Duke did not play well prior to coming in this tournament, you know, losing to North Carolina at home for, you know, for an opportunity to win an ACC regular season championship. Then they lost in their first opportunity in the ACC tournament. I don't think they've been playing well, but to their credit, they beat a good James Madison team and looked really good, and they didn't just beat them, they crushed them. I thought they were solid versus Vermont. So Duke's not winning the game versus Houston. I mean, again, nothing against Vermont, nothing against James Madison, two good programs, but neither of them are even in the same stratosphere of Duke talent-wise, NBA prospects, you know, just the amount of talent. So Duke's not beating Houston. I thought Duke, who had not been playing well, got a great draw to get to the Sweet 16. Both won Vermont opening game and then playing either James Madison or Wisconsin in the second round. And it was very favorable for Duke. I think it ends for Duke versus Houston on, this week. But I will say, if Duke wants to change the narrative about your talk, just like you asked the question, are they tough enough? There's no better opportunity to do that against a team like Houston this week.
When you look at the rest of that region, does the run of NC State end with Marquette, or could they have one more game before they get to Houston?
You know what? I think no matter whoever plays, I think Houston's advancing out of there. But I think North Carolina State can give Marquette a little bit of a run. I mean, the way they're playing right now, and DJ Burns is such a hard matchup. Now, I think Marquette's really good. They've got one of the best point guards in the country, if not the best, in the way he can see the floor and pass the ball. I mean, I love Marquette's group, but I do think NC State, you know, DJ Burns, he lives and dies by, he catches it on the long post. When I say the long post, he catches it right by the three-point line or a few feet in and backs you down and starts backing you down. And he's such a great passer. He can really pass the ball. So you have to make a decision. Do you double him or not? And then when guys like Casey Marcel are making threes, or McConnell is, attacking closeout, it changes. DJ Horn, when he's making shots, it really changes the deal. And Diarra's been playing. I mean, his rebounding numbers are, if you look at his stats on his rebounding, it's out of this world.
Josh, so, we're up against a hard break. I want to thank you for coming on. These are the
appreciate you guys having. I know I could be long-winded. I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Josh.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour. Pat Kerwin scheduled to join us in a little more than 15 minutes, live from the NFL owners' meetings. Some news has come out of Orlando this morning, Mark. Nothing earth-shattering, but they announced the Hall of Fame game. You know, for some of you that, you know, you are jonesing, and that is the first time you see helmet and shoulder pads. And that, for some of you, is enough. You've made it. And you're going to be able to make it 5 more weeks until the season kicks off. Really, only about 3 or 4 more till the college season kicks off. August 1st, Mark. For those of you that just need to see helmet and shoulder pads, even if all the players wearing them you don't recognize. Houston and Chicago. Texans and Bears. CJ Stroud, the Ohio State guy, will he even play a few snaps in Canton?
No, he won't.
Caleb Williams, will he play for the Bears? Rookie quarterback, expected to be first overall pick. First chance to get him on the field. There you go. August 1st.
How many snaps will Ryan Tannehill take when the Bears sign him at some point this summer?
That could be a poll question coming up soon. Where does Ryan Tannehill end up? Chicago? Denver?
Denver.
His couch.
I'll vote Chicago, although I think Denver would be a better place.
Yeah, I'm voting Denver.
placeholder either way.
Yep.
As both are expected to take quarterbacks.
So there you go. And that's because you figured Bears, they got what? Steve McMichael, and I don't say this lightly, if he can live to see that day. But he's going in. And Hester's going in, right?
Correct.
And is Andre Johnson going in? The Texans wide receiver? Did he get in?
Yeah.
So there you go. Texans Bears Hall of Fame game. August 1st. I think it's a Thursday. They play the game now before Hall of Fame weekend. That's like the kickoff, pardon the pun, to Hall of Fame weekend. They play it on a Thursday, and then, you know, all the Hall of Fame stuff Friday and the ceremony Saturday night. Friday is when they do the dinner and they actually give the guys their sport coats.
Shouldn't they have their coats on Thursday? I mean, if you're going to play the game on Thursday, shouldn't they be able to walk around in their jackets on Thursday?
Well, they're not in the Hall of Fame yet. I mean, it's like being president-elect. You know, you're not president yet. You're just president-elect. We had Trump in the booth after he had won in 2016 at Army-Navy. And so, you know, it flows off the tip of your tongue, you know. Hello, Mr. President. Congratulations, Mr. President. Then you got to throw in a hyphen and another word. I mean.
What did you go with?
I shook his hand and said, congratulations, honor to meet you, sir.
All right.
That's what I went with. It's the President of the United States. What
no,
else?
I was at a party that he was at long before he was president. I met him like, hey, great party, Mr. Trump. And got the hand out and he shook my hand, said thank you, and walked away. I'm like, I passed that test.
You know me.
He's a big dude.
He is a big guy. He is.
That's what floored me when I met him, is how big he is.
President Obama's tall. Also, Trump is tall, but also broad. Right.
And the club champ.
Well, it's his club. So, you know, it's his handicap system than everybody else's. That's a, you know, it's good to be the king.
Damn right.
As they said in a movie, Once Upon a Time. So anyway, that's the early news, the 8 a.m. news coming out of the owners' meetings, expected to vote one way or the other on what they're doing about the kickoff coming up a little later on today.
So did you catch what Deion said? I think it was Sunday. I think it came out Sunday on a podcast.
Well, he's been saying a few things. I caught the... He said, and I don't know if this is what you were going with because we didn't talk about this, but he said, I don't think it was Sunday, I think it was a week or so ago, that his kid would be the second-rated quarterback in this draft.
Well, he said, you know, he said his kid would be, he said both his kid and the corner are going to be top four picks. But it's not that I'm worried about, or not even worried about, that I'm bringing up, because he said if it's the right city. And he said if not, we'll pull an Eli.
There we go. Hey, there were a lot of concerns Caleb Williams was going to do that to Chicago. A lot of concerns. In the fall, November, December, there were a lot of concerns about Caleb's dad. That behind the scenes, he was difficult.
Hell, I think there are still concerns that he doesn't really want to be in Chicago.
I'm not sure that he does either.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Do you think it's more, excuse me, is it city or franchise that Deion, what do you think he meant?
It's franchise. It's owners.
Okay.
It's certain owners that he doesn't want his kid or Hunter there, the D-back, to play for.
Well, but he has said he does, you know, for my son, I really don't want him playing in a bad weather city. I mean, I'd prefer he not play quarterback in a bad weather city.
Well, that's what I mean. It's Deion. I mean, he says things like this. He's about the flash here and there, so I don't know if he legitimately meant the city or if he's referring to, I don't want my kids playing for the Browns.
Well, when he said pulling Eli, it leads a lot. I mean, because that was done because of ownership.
Right. Archie took the lead on that, too. so that he took all the heat and didn't really, except in the city of San Diego, in which they hated Eli forever. But that didn't stick to Eli entering the league and going forward. Archie took the hit there.
And that's what Deion's doing right now.
Uh-huh.
So just curious your thoughts of Deion saying we're going to pull an Eli.
Well, admittedly, I'm a little biased. I love Prime. Love him.
I understand that you love Prime.
And we've talked over the years about if we had a kid who was that gifted athletically, the things that we would do. All right? And I think it's difficult. It's more difficult going forward, Mark. We were, as athletes and sports people, we were much more accepting of our, quote, fate. Where, okay, we enter the draft, we get drafted by such and such a team, they've got us for so many years. Yeah, that's not the feeling anymore. The feeling is like, no, I don't want to be here, I'm not going to play. I'm not going to play for you. I mean, look in the NBA all the time. I thought I'd like it here, but we're a year and a half into this five-year deal. I don't want to be here anymore.
But that's established players who are signing as free agents somewhere. That's not someone that's getting drafted. It is a very different.
But the problem is that if you go to someplace you don't want to go, they, quote, own you for 7 years, potentially. The five-year rookie deal, and then they can go tag. Well, hell, then you're nearly 30. So if you're going to have a power play, when's the best time to have it? Before the draft. You just say, I'm not signing with you. I'll sit out the year. I'll go back into the draft.
It's a lot easier if you're going to be the first overall pick or a top five pick. If you're going to be the 14th draft pick, that's tougher to do.
True. True.
So I'm not certain that these guys are top four. They might be. I've not started getting into the 25 draft yet.
Well, I don't think Hunter can do that. I don't think as a corner you can do that. You know, for as great as Deion turned out to be, he couldn't do that coming out of Florida State. But a quarterback can do that. Sanders, I think, can say to a team, I ain't playing for you. Don't draft me. You can trade the pick, get as much as you can. I'm not playing for you. And think about right now the teams that we think are going to be drafted in the top five. Carolina and New England, right? Be two of them? What if he just looks both of them in the face and goes, yeah, don't bother. Seriously. I got the money. All right. In fact, if you're serious about this, I'll go back to college.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Minutes before the hour, Pat Kerwin got called away. It's that damn day job he's got. Got to interview head coaches and owners at the owners' meetings. The head coach of the Dolphins sat down right before he was going to do our show. Boy, can't believe we got bumped for the head coach of the Dolphins. Come on now. Priorities. Pecking order. Can't believe we're below him. So what are we, 65th? 32 owners? Which means I guess anyone in a cheesehead can just step in and be the Packers owner for an interview.
So probably 31, because there's no figurehead for the Packers. Then you got 32 GMs and 32 coaches.
So the 95. So we're 96th. We're 96th.
By the way, I got a couple buddies who have quote unquote ownership in the Packers, and I just love talking smack to them. When anytime the Packers do something stupid,
you blame them.
I'm like, hey, what are you thinking? What went on in that owner's room?
Listen, if they allowed yahoos like us, all right, Miller and Moulton years ago would have bought into the Packers just so one time we could get in that room and go, what are you doing?
Yeah, and then I mean,
Aaron Rodgers, we've got Brett Favre, for goodness sakes. What are you guys doing?
Trust me, I had a field day with that one, the whole Rodgers saga at the end there last year. That was fun.
Forget the end. We would have been there in 05 screaming at him, what are we doing? We got a quarterback.
So we've spent a lot of the show talking Ohtani. We got this text, David. So Ohtani is a gambler and a liar, or the stupidest person in the world based on the choices we've given.
What if he's just a victim of theft? What if he's just a victim of theft? What if somebody, I mean, listen, people steal money from other people all the time. And as people have pointed out to us via text or in the Twitch chat room, celebrities, athletes, they get, you know, millions of
they
dollars
get duped.
Stolen from them all the time.
They get duped to, right. You know, the Madoff thing or an investment here. This is someone stealing money. There's no duping here. You know, Ohtani wasn't investing in condos in LA somewhere.
Well, I mean, you could call, I mean, the interpreter's name is Mizuhara. Okay. You could just say he, it turns out he was investing in the development of the Mizuhara project.
You could say that.
You could say that.
But that would be ignorant.
Yeah. It'd be trying to spin it in a more positive way. Yes. That's the part that most of us are having trouble believing. How did this guy get access to your money? You know, that, you know, he said yesterday a few things, okay? Mizuhara has been stealing money from us and has told lies. I have never bet on baseball or any other sports, nor have I asked someone to do that on my behalf.
Those, the told lies part, that is him talking to ESPN the first time. That's what I gather from that. Before he changed his story and said that Ohtani didn't pay off all his gambling debts.
Now, I mean, it's not hard to believe if someone's a thief that they're also a liar, right?
Very true.
I mean, if I'm stealing money from you and there's a good chance that on Tuesday I'll have one story and on Wednesday I'll have another.
Then it goes back to the other part of this text that Ohtani is not a smart man.
Well, the money part, if, I mean, how in the world did this guy, to believe Ohtani, this guy got access to his money?
And Ohtani didn't have access to his money or was not aware of nine $500,000 wire transfers. Nine, not one, nine times.
I got you. Now, I will say I can believe, I mean, I've never really had money. Doubt that I ever will. All right, but.
Well, you never know. Mega Millions is over a billion tonight.
Well, and I've bought two tickets. I mean, not just one. I've really invested in this. I've bought two. But when there have been only a few times in my life in which I haven't lived check to check. In which I know whatever befalls me, I know I got the money in the bank. So I just, you know, yeah, fine, put it on a card. Yeah, pay for, yeah, sure. Can we get this? Yeah, absolutely, we can get this. Isn't it essentially the same thing, only at a greater scale? If you've got the money, I mean, do you pay as close attention? You got the money. I'm loaded. What's difficult
to our rich people in the audience right now, 21,000. Are any of you that careless with your money that have it? I'm curious because David and I don't. This is a gray area for us.
Right. Think about the money you have to have that a $500,000 could disappear. And, you know, you just, who knows? You've got investments. You got this. Money's constantly coming in and out of the account that, you know, if you're not looking at exactly what the debit is, you could miss it. Is that possible? It seems very far-fetched to 98% of us. Very far-fetched. In fact, 99% of us. So.
And well, to your points yesterday, this is a guy who's very regimented in
right.
all parts of his life, apparently except his finances.
Well, but, you know, we have seen people that are very regimented, the whole deal, in their athletic life and not in the rest of their life.
Very rarely, though.
If
you're type A, you're usually type A.
It is true. Jake in our Twitch chat room says, I think Jeff Bezos would miss $4.5 million. Actually, I don't.
He wouldn't miss it. He'd notice it.
You think?
Yes, I do.
Half a million at a time. But, so, and of course now that's it. He ain't talking about it. And so we're going to have to wait for the LA Times and ESPN to get tipped off from the feds. I mean, how else are you going to get information? If you go to Ohtani's people, you're getting spin. And if you're ESPN or the LA Times and Ohtani's people wants to give you some information, you're like, well, I want to see some bank records. Okay, that's what I want to see. Okay, this guy alleges that you wrote $500,000 checks to pay off his debts. Show me the bank records. Answer me one question. How in the world did he get access to your money? I got two things. Show me the bank records to see if, in fact, that's true. And then B, how did he get access to it?
Seems far-fetched, David. It really does. I don't know if he was gambling, but it...
Well, that's the other thing, though, is that so what if the interpreter ran up a bunch of gambling debts? Honestly. And Ohtani paid him off. I mean, gambling, I mean, come on. Ohtani will plead guilty to a misdemeanor of some kind. He'll get probation. All right? And, you know, he was a loyal friend to a fault because sports betting, the way it went about it, first off, it's illegal in California, and the way he was doing it was through a bookie, and that's illegal everywhere. Like, Ohtani's reputation couldn't handle that.
And a huge part of this, I think, that David's brought up a couple times is his image in Japan. Maybe
that's
why
think.
Some of the PR has gone the way it has.
And even David Sampson agreed to the point of keeping his sponsors happy
right
in Japan.
But the story's far-fetched. And David Sampson also pointed out, and we did it earlier on the show, boy, is Adam Silver in the NBA thrilled about this Ohtani story, because it looks like they've got a developing situation. Jontay Porter, Raptors forward, being investigated after he left early.
He played hooky.
Games. What, Trent?
He played hooky.
Well, you play hooky, you don't show up at all. Right?
Right. He pulled the shoot.
So he the bets would go through.
Right. He played.
He's active.
He played, pulled himself one time because of an eye injury. The other time he said he was sick.
Played 4 minutes in the first game, 3 minutes in the second. Games 2 months apart. Heavy betting on his prop bets. Now, how much money is normally bet on Jontay Porter and his prop bets? Apparently, it's like $1,000 to $2,000 is how much gets bet on a normal night on Jontay Porter. Apparently, he had the most money bet on him on the prop line those two nights in the NBA.
Right. They were the most popular prop bets each night. And not just the total, the unders were the most popular prop bets each time.
And this is when you're Silver, Goodell, Manfred, Bettman. This is what's got to frighten you. I mean, truly, this is what has to frighten you. Because you have how many players in your sports, in your leagues? And think about the infinitesimal percentage that has to get caught up for the public to all of a sudden go, oh boy, we got a problem. I mean, Mark, we got 30 teams in the NBA, 15 guys to a roster. That's 450 players. How many of them need to get caught doing something inappropriate for the public to go, damn, we got a problem?
One, David.
So you think if this is true, just Jontay Porter alone, Because I'm thinking the number is 2 or 3, but okay.
I mean, just look at the Twitch chat room. Guys, I'm telling you, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's rampant rigging and illegal gambling going on throughout sports. It's only going to get worse. I don't believe that. Maybe I'm naive. The fact that this guy got caught so quickly leads me to believe that there is a good system in place to make sure that it's not happening. It's why, to us, we've always been proponents of legal gambling, because the leagues and the casinos want to get to the bottom of this. When you're betting through the guy, it's a lot more likely that things like this could happen. Bookies aren't going to run out and tell the police, hey, I've got an illegal bookmaking business going on, and I think there's some game fixing going on.
Plus, you don't know how much money is being wagered because it's not on the books. So think about it. In the NBA, you got 450 guys. In baseball, 26 times 30, so you have 780. Obviously, in the NFL, if you do 53 times 32, do the math. I mean, that's like 1,700. And then in hockey, you're talking 20 plus, even though only 20 are skate on a given night, usually 12 forwards, 6 defensemen, 2 goalies. But, you know, do the math there. You got 600-700. How many do you need if you're running a league and you're, come on, you're taking all this money, all of it. FanDuel, DraftKings, the whole deal. You're going to take it all. And then you're encouraging every one of your franchises to strike a deal with the nearest casino to them.
Hell, we're putting books inside stadiums.
Yep.
Well, and to Mark's point, too, it's not like this was Kevin Durant or LeBron James. This is Jonte Porter.
Right.
And he got caught like that.
Happens in tennis all the time. They've been dealing with this in tennis for 10 years.
Maybe longer.
Yeah, they can tell right away. I mean, they can tell mid-match if something's going on.
That's why betting table tennis is the way to go, folks.
Miller and Moulton. So we'll reschedule Pat for tomorrow. Working at the damn owners meetings, whatever.
Big time does again for an NFL coach.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Man, take those Pinchers gift certificates back. You pull this one more time. Diamond District bonus hours next.